This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to call Senate Health and Human Services together. We really appreciate everyone being here. I'm Senator Deb Soholt and chair of the committee. To begin with, let's establish a quorum.
Senators Duhamel.
Here.
Foster, excused. Jensen.
Here.
Rush, excused. Russell. Steinhauer excused, Soholt.
Here.
Madam Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, everyone. I want to welcome everyone that's on the internet listening to this Health and Human Services Committee. We have three bills that we're going to be taking up today, and we really appreciate your involvement in public policy. I want to remind you that if you want to testify on any of the three bills today, to please sign in at the podium and to print legibly. That really helps us when we're trying to craft the minutes. Not, I say we, like I have anything to do with that, but, you know, our fabulous team that works to craft those, and thank you, takes care of all of that. We have pages that leave their high schools for 2 weeks and join us, and would you come on up and introduce yourself and where you're from, and what you're thinking about moving forward in this age of life. You may not have that all nailed down, so there's room to change. But what are you interested in?
All right, I'm Lainey Asby, and I go to Highmore, and I'm going to go to SCSU next year, and I'm not for sure what I'm going to do. I need to figure that out.
Okay, so yay, go Jacks, and if you want to talk about the nursing program, we can connect. So thank you for helping us. Good morning.
Hi, I'm Ella Hand. I'm a senior at Stanley County High School in Fort Pierre, and I plan to go to Brookings to study biology.
Oh, two jackrabbits. Doesn't that just make a committee chair proud? So thank you so much for helping us out today. Great time for everyone to check their cell phones and make sure that they are in a silent mode so they don't interrupt our proceedings today. All right, we would have senators' minutes before us from our it would be January 24th meeting. I would entertain a motion to deal with those. Senator Jensen has moved and Senator Duhamel has seconded approval of those minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of January 24th, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, those have carried. All right, we're going to begin today with Senate Bill 20. This is an act to create a monitor to review and respond to complaints related to the care provided to youth in custody or care of certain care facilities, treatment centers, and programs. This was actually introduced by our committee on behalf of the Department of Social Services and is a pre-filed bill. And so we'll open up proponent testimony. Good morning. Happy Monday. It is Monday, right, everybody? Okay, I had to think about it when we have Monday off and Tuesday's Monday.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Regina Weisler with the Department of Social Services. We bring Senate Bill 20 to you today as a result of the study that was conducted by the Department of Social Services at the request of Governor Noem to look at the inspections, to look at the licensure, to look at the oversight over these facilities. So we're talking about shelter care facilities, group care facilities, residential facilities, and intensive residential. And just to kind of set the stage, when we're talking about group care, we may be talking about Wellfully, located in Rapid City, McCross's Boys Ranch in Sioux Falls, New Beginnings in Aberdeen. When we're talking about residential, we're talking about the Black Hills and Sioux Falls Children's Home, Abbott House, and when we're talking about intensive, we're talking about Aurora Plains Academy. So currently, the shelter care facilities, group care, residential, intensive, they currently have procedures to address grievances within their facility. However, this monitor would be an independent entity from these facilities to receive concerns, grievances from children placed in those facilities, from their parents, from staff in the facilities, or anyone else who might have a concern regarding the quality of care. These facilities are currently licensed by the Department of Social Services, and this entity would be appointed by Secretary Gill. At this point in time, she is looking at an entity outside of DSS that she would contract with to be the monitor. Any grievances that come to the monitor would be confidential in terms of who is making that grievance report. and the monitor would have the ability to enter the facilities, to review records, to interview staff, to interview youth, and to make a decision about the grievance, whether it's valid, and if it is valid, what needs to be done to resolve it. If the grievance that the monitor receives relates to child abuse and neglect, then that would be reported to the Department of Social Services for further investigation. There's also an opportunity here for, like I said, the monitor, the grievance person who receives a grievance, those are confidential. If anything happens in terms of releasing that information, if there's a hindrance by a facility to allow the monitor in, or any type of retaliation, then there is a punishment of a Class 1 misdemeanor, and that is 1 year in the county jail, a $2,000 fine, or both. So we think this is a good bill for children, for their safety and care in these facilities, and we would appreciate your support of Senate Bill 20. And I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Secretary. All right, further proponent testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Amy Witt. I am the Vice President of Children and Youth Services at Lutheran Social Services. In my position, I oversee several residential facilities in South Dakota, two psychiatric residential treatment facilities, Summit Oak Center in Sioux Falls and Canyon Hills Center in Spearfish, a group care center, New Beginning Center in Aberdeen, two shelter care facilities, Arise Youth Center East in Sioux Falls and Arise East Center Youth Center West in Rapid City, and also in an intensive independent living program, New Alternatives in Rapid City. I'm here today because LSS supports Senate Bill 20 and the creation of the monitor to review and respond to grievances and complaints. We're open to that additional oversight and really believe in the transparency of the services we offer and provide to families. We see the grievance monitor as a way to support the work we do and the work of the Department of Social Services and really further ensure that quality care to youth and families in our state. The monitor will provide an additional support for families and youth being served in the facilities and really provides that identified independent person, like Regina mentioned, that families can reach out to and really have a go-to person when issues arise and they feel they need somebody to go to. The monitor will ensure timely responses and resolutions for any complaints and grievances that are brought forth and really ensures the voices of those families and youth are being heard and their concerns are being addressed. LSS provides many services in partnership with the Department of Social Services and really see this as an extension of that partnership. We all have a common goal to support youth and families and provide safety, stability, and well-being to them and really want the best care for children placed in our facilities and really welcome that additional oversight. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here today. Further proponent testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. My name is Justin Smith. I'm an attorney from Sioux Falls, and I'm also the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Association of Youth Care Providers. Members of SDAYCP include McCrossin Boys Ranch, Lutheran Social Services, Aurora Plains, and other private entities in the state of South Dakota that engage in public-private partnerships to care for these children who are some of the most vulnerable youths in our state. We rise as a proponent to Senate Bill 20. We are the entities who will be regulated by the new law and our personnel. While we welcome this oversight and are confident in the integrity of our personnel and our programs, we care for some of these most vulnerable youths in the state and believe strongly in the need to confirm the safety and health of these children. So in summary, I would ask you to please give your favorable consideration to Senate Bill 20, and I will stand by for further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 20. Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 20? Seeing none, we'll open it up to committee questions. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see, for the Secretary, I guess. It says here that the secretary will designate a person or entity to serve as the monitor. What does that selection process look like?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Senator Jensen, just to clarify, I'm not the secretary of the department.
Yeah, I understand that.
Just wanted to make sure that I wasn't promoted over the weekend. So at this point in time, we're in discussion about what that would be. If it is a contract with an entity outside, then we'll probably need to look at doing a request for proposal process to gather proposals of individuals or entities who are interested in being that monitor.
Follow up? Yep, go ahead.
Now, are they going to be funded through the Department of Social Services?
Madam Chair?
Yep.
Yes, they would be.
Okay. Follow up?
Please, go ahead.
At the very end, earlier in the bill, it says something, as it does at the end, that talks about the confidentiality of anybody making a report to the monitor. I have a bit of a challenge with that. I mean, I understand that there's a need for confidentiality to some degree, but, you know, like in a lot of cases where there are complaints, like, say, home situations where, like, CPS is involved, and anybody, and in divorce cases, anybody can make an allegation and anonymously, and it can really cause havoc, especially if the accusation is not true. So what kind of safeguards are there going to be in regards to this?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Senator Jensen, so if a youth in a facility reaches out to the monitor to with a grievance regarding maybe visitation with family, the food, whatever it might be within that facility, the confidentiality of that youth will be kept confidential with the monitor and then through the monitor to the secretary of the department. The investigation into each one of those grievances to determine whether they're valid or not will take place, and with no retaliation of any kind towards that youth, regardless of the outcome of that investigation.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Are you saying that the accused would meet with the monitor and try to get a better understanding exactly what transpired?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
So the monitor goes in to interview the youth who perhaps made the grievance. So there would be interviews with that youth. There would be interviews with perhaps the person that the youth named in the grievance, with the management of the facility. It could be a records review also, but to gather as much information as possible in order to determine the validity of that grievance.
Senator, do you have one more follow-up?
Not right now, thanks.
All right. Further questions? I would have one. So do you want to talk about the process right now when there be a grievance and what this bill does to improve that process?
Yes, Madam Chair. So currently the facilities that we've mentioned here, like Amy mentioned LSS and the other facilities, they currently have grievance processes that are a youth in the facility may submit a grievance to the facility, and then the facility then is the one who looks into that grievance. So this is just another step oversight of an outside entity who can receive grievances from the youth, from the parent, from staff within the facility, and then the monitor can go in and review the validity of each one of those grievances. So I believe it gives greater oversight of the grievance process by someone outside the facility rather than just the facility resolving that grievance on their own.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam
Chair. Oh, Senator Jensen,
I'm sorry. Just briefly. You used the word may when you were talking about that the accused may be contacted by the monitor in the event of an accusation.
Madam Chair, please let me clarify, Senator Jensen. when doing an investigation or looking at those grievances, if that individual needs to be interviewed, they'll be interviewed. I would guess they would have to be interviewed in order to gather all the information regarding that grievance, especially if it's about a person in that facility.
Thank you. Any further questions, Senators? All right, seeing none, we'll move it to committee discussion and or action. Senator Russell. It's been moved by Senator Russell and seconded by Senator Duhamel. Do pass on Senate Bill 20. Discussion on your motion.
Yes, the one question that I have that I'd like you to resolve for me before we get to the floor is this potential RF, the process for the acquisition of the designee, how that will be done, because I want that to be the most transparent process that we can have. So that's the one thing. The other thing that I'm interested in is the estimated cost of implementation for the program. It may be very minuscule, I don't know, but that would be my other question as we get down to the floor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead.
You know, why I made the motion is because I think that it's a positive step for the department to engage in this type of a process, to have kind of an ombudsman type of situation where people feel free to make these types of requests of the agency to improve the situation and to make sure that everybody's being taken care of. I think that this probably should have been done a long time ago, and I appreciate the department moving forward with it. The other thing that Senator Jensen had a concern about with the confidentiality, I certainly understand his concern, but what alleviates my concern as it relates to that is the fact that who the complaint would be about would be the employee of the government or what's going on in the government. And therefore, under those circumstances with potential for retaliation, I think that the confidentiality of the situation is certainly appropriate. So with that, I thank you, and I will be supporting the bill.
Further discussion on the do-pass motion of Senate Bill 20. I, too, would really encourage due pass on this. I think this is a good process to have another entity be able to look at this in an objective way, and I really appreciate that there's facility support within the testimony and no opposition, that people are open to this, you know, level of someone can complain and it's going to be investigated. And to Senator Jensen's issue about having been involved in investigations through the Board of Nursing, sometimes the complaint is just a complaint, but it doesn't have any valid teeth in relationship to it. So the investigation transpires, but it's a very limited scope because someone's just, there's not really an issue that's transpiring once the data is looked at. So not everyone has to become involved. So what I heard the department saying is there would be a continued moving forward to get to the root of the issue as far as you would need to go. But sometimes that stops at, you know, varying levels. So, but really appreciate those concerns brought forward by Senator Jensen, and glad we answered those questions. Okay. We are now have a do-pass motion on Senate Bill 20 in front of us. All in favor will vote aye. All opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Duhamel.
Aye.
Foster excused. Jensen.
Aye.
Rush excused. Russell.
Aye.
Steinhauer excused. Soholt.
Aye.
Four ayes and three excused.
All right. Senate Bill 20 has no opposition testimony and no opposing votes. Is the I'm able to deem it to the consent agenda,
yes.
But I just want to make sure that that seems all right with everyone, or if there's some feeling there should be some discussion on the floor. All right. We will not put that on consent agenda. Senator Russell, would you be willing to speak to it on the floor of the Senate?
Yes.
Okay, great. So Senate Bill 20 will move down to the Senate on the regular agenda. Thank you. Okay, now I'm going to ask Senator Russell to conduct the business for the next, he's going to chair for the next two bills.
You want me to move down there and just pass the gavel?
What would you like, sir?
Whatever's easiest for people.
Thank you. The next matter on the agenda is Senate Bill, and let me get to scroll to the top here. Senate Bill 1, an act to provide for the use of electronic communication in the involuntary commitment process and to declare an emergency. Proponent testimony. Good morning, Ms. Chair.
Good morning, Senator. Thank you for chairing and my esteemed colleagues on the Health and Human Services Committee. I'm Senator Deb Soholt from District 14. So I'm going to give a little bit of overview that really has to do with Senate Bill 1 and also our next bill, which has already moved through the House, which is House Bill 1005, because they come together in relationship to the work that was done by the telehealth task force this past summer. Now, where did those task forces come from? In the summer of 18, I chaired the Mental Health Access Overall Interim Study. And that was a very large scope of work, trying to look at where were all the access points in mental health. We then determined that we could see the scope of what needed to be done, but that it was important for us to really start thinking about how we were going to shift our focus from the most acute and expensive care and move it into prevention and early crisis intervention. We actually had worked with an inverted pyramid, and if you think about the tip of that inverted pyramid, that was the most expensive care model, and we could see that from the prevention and early crisis intervention, many times we were moving right down to, instead of spending time in prevention and those supports, we were moving right to acute care and felt we could course interrupt that. We were also seeing that if we could dig deeper into mental health access within the state of South Dakota, that we could knit together what's happening in justice reform, in the meth opioid addiction issues, and in child maltreatment. And that in putting these together, we have an opportunity for something that's not just about mental health access, but it's also about chemical dependency, about providing supports into K through 12. So what happened was, this last legislative session, all of you participated and helped to establish Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 2. That was five task forces that met in the summer, well, and into the fall of 2019. And they were in five areas of one is to redefine the acute mental health hospitalizations in the areas of short, intermediate, and long-term placement, keeping people in community whenever possible. We found that when we were utilizing the Human Services Center, that there was about 300 patients a year that had 5 days or less length of stay. So we felt it was important to start looking at how could we provide those same kind of supports, an HSC bed type, within community versus all that transportation and time and pulling people out of community. We also looked at reducing overall use of acute mental health hospitalizations by developing and supporting alternatives that are community-based. Really, this work is based out of the development of regional triage centers based on what's happening in Sioux Falls when we found that we could have people that wouldn't go to jail or to the acute care hospital but could be stabilized in a 2-3 stabilization space that really is about getting them back to a stable condition based on their chronicity versus saying, are we going to be able to cure everything, which leads to a longer length of stay within the hospital system. The third task force was to leverage telehealth and telemedicine to the full extent possible, and that's the two bills that you're going to be hearing this morning are in relationship to that. The fourth was to redefine Human Service Center nursing home admission criteria, because we have in our statutes, if you would have organic brain changes that would lead to mental health behavior outcome changes, you can be admitted to HSC and term out your life within that structure, whereas many people could be kept in their regional nursing home space if we provided proper supports and new training and education. That's going to be a long-term development piece. And the fifth group was to increase our capacity for transitional housing, residential services, and communities, and to develop caregiver supports for chronic mental health issues. There's a lot of family fatigue when these long-term cases, whether it's cancer or anything else, and there need to be supports for people within these long-term chronic conditions. So these five task forces you're going to see before you, and I would imagine they're going to end up all in this committee. Most of them are coming this direction if they're coming from the House side, is eight bills and two resolutions. And these are all puzzle pieces that fit together on improving our mental health access within the state of South Dakota. So there are multiple recommendations that came out of the committee that I chaired, and my vice chair, Representative Herman Otten, is also in the room, and he'll tee up the House bill. I really appreciated the support of the committee, and what we did in all these task forces is brought the multidisciplinary team to the table so that we would have agency support as well as legislative support, and then professionals that were in the field that could help to inform us really changing this. I mean, we can see that if we start to move some things forward in the state of South Dakota, that we actually have the capacity to really transform what we're doing in mental health access. But this is not something that just happens with one bill. It has to happen in multiple years, one building upon another. So the bills that I'm bringing before you today, this morning, are part of that puzzle piece of creating a runway, if you will, for us to increase access within the state of South Dakota. So let's first talk about then the bill that's before us, Senate Bill 1. This is an act to provide for the use of electronic communication in the involuntary commitment process and to declare an emergency. Now, what does Senate Bill 1 do? Let's talk about the bill and then we'll talk about the why. So if you look at it expands in Section 1, the Chapter of 27A-10-6, to say that an examination by a qualified mental health professional, and we can get into, you know, what does that mean exactly, but within 24 hours, this says that that petition filing, if we're going to do involuntary commitment or having people, not processing the involuntary commitment, that we could do the QMHP application virtually. So you can see the statement is it can be conducted in person or through real-time interactive audio and video. So it gives us the capacity to do this in a telehealth modality. Secondly, in the definition of terms section, you can see that it's either in person, again, or adding the real-time interactive audio and video. Section 3 gets into the actual mobile crisis team intervention, and I'm going to talk about the why of that as well. And you can see there's some changes about it's referring to a person or a member of the mobile crisis team or crisis intervention team. It strikes the language of direct supervision of, because in the licensing for all those folks, that oversight is defined through all that different licensing in the QMHPs. So we don't have to have it in this piece in the mobile crisis. And it talks about it can be in paper form, electronic form, either direct supervision of the person or direct engagement with the person through real-time interactive audio and video. So this, again, creates the virtual pathway. Section 4 talks about the immunity from liability for crisis referral and placement. And that is adding in the liability language. So what you have to imagine here is this is like a mobile ambulance. It's a virtual ambulance coming in for mental health conditions. It's a way to provide the most qualified person in every corner of our state. This legislation will allow the business models to emerge that can happen to allow, so we don't have to put that person in a sheriff's car and drive them 200 miles to another facility where we can access a QMHP. Now, let's talk about the why. We believe, first of all, we took a look at the entire qualified workforce of mental health counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, and I would say we are going to have a full court press just trying to stay even in the state of South Dakota. For the professionals that are going to retire and just succession planning to replace those that we already have, we are going to have to do a full court press to make that happen. It's a pipe dream to think about in all of these areas of our state where we don't have qualified mental health providers at ready access that we're going to be able to place an actual person living in a bricks and mortar place to accomplish that. Virtual reality modalities tell us now that we can have very safe care by a QMHP that is happening virtually in every corner of our state. So what we found with this crisis intervention that in Sioux Falls, we have crisis teams that can actually respond to homes and to de-escalate a situation. And when that happens, when you get the appropriate person in that place and space, 90% never have to leave their home. Now, we thought that was an astounding statistic. I mean, so much so that we didn't believe it. And that really emerged out of our telehealth work in the summer of 18. And we said, all right, then we have to be able to create that same thing can happen anywhere in South Dakota. So what happens is there's a crisis that happens, someone has a moment, and if they can bring in a proper person to de-escalate that situation, we can have people stay at home with a 24-hour follow-up to ensure that they are connected back to community-based resources. That's a really powerful way to help people within the state of South Dakota. So right now in Brookings County, there has been a grant that's been given to Avera eCare, and they're actually piloting this virtual iPad and a QMHP, a person being able to come in and de-escalate the situation within their police cars and their sheriff cars. So we are going to have the data. We actually did a demonstration in our telehealth committee to see how this works, this interactive. We also had done in the summer of 18 a virtual interactive counseling session to see, does this like really work? Can we remove time and space? Can that be an effective counseling session? And I will tell you what happened. We had a mock person. We weren't actually dealing with a real person. But when it transpired and we were all watching it, the person who was pretending to be a patient actually ended up in a personal counseling session with the virtual person because they are so skilled. The other thing that's happening is that Avera just got a significant grant to develop the first nationwide certification program for people that choose to move forward in that to be able to do the provision of mental health work virtually, which I think is very exciting because it can be an additional credential, not a mandatory credential, but an additional credential that can lift people up to give assurance. Because I'll tell you that I ran a clinic myself for 18 years where we did telehealth, and the virtual was just like as if you were seated in the exam room where we were doing a session in working with women's health. We came to see that that screen was just as if they're right there, that you could reach out and touch them. We didn't see any difference in how that worked. So we're seeing very positive results. The Brookings County project just got launched at the end of the summer, and so we're going to be interested in what the preliminary data is. This bill is for us to be able to think about moving forward. And the governor has talked about broadband in the state, and we're developing it. We analyzed all of that in our telehealth group to say, well, how long is it going to be? And by 2023, the majority of the citizens in the state of South Dakota are going to be able to have the appropriate access so that we would be able to provide this kind of virtual care in all corners of our state to all of our citizens. And for those that would end up not having service, we would just have to go old school. We'd have to do it like what we're doing in kind of this clunky way. I will tell you, we had the sheriff from Perkins County sitting on our telehealth task force this summer, and he was wonderful. Sheriff Kelly on talking to us about the remote spaces and how this would work and how they work with their community-based mental health centers. This is not in any way, shape, or form to supplant the structures that exist within the community. It's actually the opposite. It's a way for us to de-escalate and help the situation and then get them connected back up with their community-based resource. And what I love about this work and the team that wrapped their arms around it was that every citizen in our state would have the opportunity to have the highest standard of care. And so while the virtual is a tool, it's the credentials and the quality of the person that can come into the situation that we do not have presently available to all of our citizens. So with that, I'll turn it over to further testimony, and I will stand by for questions on Senate Bill 1. And I thank you very much for your favorable consideration.
Thank you for your testimony and for all of your work. We greatly appreciate it. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 1. Further proponents. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Russell, committee members, Stacey Ackerman, Executive Director for the South Dakota Sheriff's Association. With your permission, Chairman Russell, my testimony for one would be the same exact testimony as on your next bill. Is it okay if I speak to both?
Sure.
Thank you. The South Dakota Sheriff's Association rise in support of Senate Bill 1 and House Bill 1005. We've been very active over the past several years, participating in legislative task forces, committees, and bringing the CIT training statewide. One area of need, whether it be rural or urban, is access to qualified mental health professionals or the crisis response teams. Oftentimes we hear from our sheriffs that when we use the emergency committal process, the patient is ready to be released from the human services center or wherever they've been committed before the deputy actually returns home. Many communities already use telehealth, but not in the crisis response area. CIT training has been very valuable, but one outcome of that is hopefully allowing these individuals we encounter in crisis to stay in the community whenever possible.
By use of telehealth for crisis response, it will allow us access in all areas of the state to these trained professionals who can help us better decide where these individuals should reside. For those reasons, we ask for your support, and I will make myself available for questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tim Rave, Sadaho, representing 54 hospitals, one tribal facility, and 29 long-term care facilities in the state. I will add nothing better than the two previous testifiers, except to rise in support of this legislation that increases access and availability of care to patients across the state. I also, like you, Mr. Chairman, commend the committee for the work they've done and will continue to do. It's been just a fantastic process for opening doors that I don't think we knew we could open previously. So with that, I stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 1. Further proponents. Good morning.
Good morning. Tiffany Wolfgang, Division Director for the Department of Social Services. DSS also supports Senate Bill 1. We had the opportunity to serve on the committee, and we believe supporting access to the electronic communication for the QMHP evaluation to be done would be very much needed in our state. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Further proponents? Hearing none, any opponent testimony? Are there any questions by members of the committee at this time? I think you did a pretty good job of laying it out. Committee action. Senator Duhamel. We have a do pass motion by
second.
Senator Duhamel, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any discussion on that motion? Any discussion on the motion? Having had the Shannon County Sheriff on numerous occasions drive all the way to Yankton and have to turn right around and go back, and having dealt with this as the state's attorney for the county gets to handle all of the mental illness claims and detention hearings. And so this is, I don't know why it hasn't been done before, frankly. So thank you for your work on this. Any further discussion on the do pass motion? Hearing none, I'd ask the secretary to call the roll.
Senator Duhamel.
Aye.
Foster excused. Jensen.
Aye.
Rush excused. Russell.
Aye.
Steinhauer excused. Soholt.
Aye.
4 ayes and 3 excused.
Motion passes unanimously. Do you want to speak to this on the floor? Okay, very good. Okay, our next matter, and let me scroll here. House Bill 1005. Proponent testimony. Good morning. We don't
morning.
Usually get to see you.
No, not very often. So
thank you for making your appearance here today.
You didn't realize how lucky your day was going to be today.
I didn't. Representative Herman Otten, good morning.
Yes, thank you. Herman Otten, District 6, Mr. and Madam Chair today, and committee members, along with Senate Bill 1, we bring you House Bill 1005, which you already have heard is part of our task force for telehealth and telemedicine. There's a couple little changes in here. If you look under Section 1, we're excluding the delivery of health care services through electronic means under the provisions of Chapter 27A-10, which is the emergency commitment of dangerously ill persons, which was being covered in Senate Bill 1, and I believe there's some language in one of the other bills that pertain to that also. And then in the second, we are taking out the word prior, as we feel that that just adds some confusion, and the reason proper is still in there yet is because there is an actual definition on that in statute, so at this time we thought that needed to stay. At this time, I'll turn it over to the good senator who is the chair and does a great job with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further proponent testimony. Senator Soholt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Deb Soholt, District 14, Senator. So I want to thank Representative Otten for just being a great vice chair. He was that both two summers, so we spent a lot of time talking about mental health conditions and really appreciated his commitment to this work. All right, so I'm going to try to explain something that seems awkward, because it is. And that is what's happening on the front page of House Bill 1005 under number 5 in Section 1, where it says telehealth. It says telehealth does not include the delivery of healthcare services through electronic means under the provisions of 27A10. So 27A10 is this commitment statute that we just cleaned up to be able to allow telehealth. Now, when you think about telehealth overall and the way we have evolved and emerged, you would think that this emergency response and debriefing, this ability to de-escalate in the moment, this virtual emergency service, if you will, for mental health, that sounds like telehealth. So to me, when you think of the whole continuum of telehealth, which could be from responding in a home now with the legislation that we're working on, all the way to telehealth working with virtual ICUs, because out of the e-care center in Sioux Falls with Avera now, there's like two doctors that are monitoring 150 intensive care units in the nation, which I think is just incredible. And you would think that this de-escalation piece, this crisis intervention piece, to me, in my mind, that seems like telehealth. And yet we bring before you where we are clearly saying that telehealth does not include the delivery of this virtual mental health service. Now, why is that? The reason is that the entire telehealth chapter, what you're not seeing in the rest of 3452, if you looked at all of the provisions, as we define telehealth in statute, and you know, this has evolved. It's like, what does it mean to be in telehealth? Well, one is that you have to have a provider-patient relationship. So it's saying in order to do telehealth, we have to have a previous relationship. This emergency crisis does not rise to that occasion because it's like an ambulance. We may not know those people, but we're coming in trying to de-escalate this emergent situation. The second thing that our telehealth chapter requires, these are the three things that really get in the way, is informed consent. So when an ambulance comes to your home, you don't sign informed consent that you can go ahead and intervene with my heart attack. You're just dealing with it. This is the same thing of bringing in a qualified person by telehealth in an emergent situation. We aren't going to be able to do the informed consent. Now, that said, does it mean we're going to ask permission to work with that person? Absolutely. And with the family member, and is it okay if I talk to you? And all, but if someone is really spinning out, it may be, you may have to start intervening to try to de-escalate someone into a situation where you could start to have a conversation and determine, do they need to go to a higher level of care, or have we calmed things down enough that, so it isn't like something's going to be thrust upon a person. The third piece is the medical records, that in our telehealth statutes overall, it says we must maintain medical records. And okay, so those are the three components, a prior relationship, informed consent, and the medical record, which is part of our overarching statutory umbrella in relationship to what does telehealth mean. I will tell you that through the work of the task force tried to think about, should we revise the entire chapter in relationship to what does telehealth mean for South Dakota? And in working with a lot of health policy lawyers, what we don't want to start having happen is that all of a sudden we've loosened it up enough, so all of a sudden we have all these fly-by-night structures that are calling themselves telehealth. Not the emergent crisis piece, but just telehealth overall, and you know, spin-up clinics are starting, and their genesis is outside of South Dakota. So through our work, it became clear to us that in order to rewrite what does telehealth mean, and to have the safety guards in place so that we can assure quality and the right providers, and you know, that we don't end up with all of these rogue players that we don't want to have in South Dakota, that we needed to leave that statute alone, adapt it over time to meet the needs of telehealth, including this crisis piece, but in the interim, not stop doing the crisis work, and then by using a definition that say all those provisions, in particular prior relationship, informed consent, establishment of a medical record, are not part of what we're talking about in this in-the-moment crisis de-escalation. Now, will there be a report written? Yes, there will. They're just like an ambulance service right now, that a report happens, like the key key characteristics, and that becomes part of that medical record eventually within a facility. But it was just too big of a lift to try to rewrite that entire chapter, so we chose to go the other way, recognizing it's a little bit confusing. So with that, I would ask for your favorable consideration of House Bill 1005, and we moved it fast. It's unusual in a Senate side to take up a House bill this quick, but we found that we needed to explain Senate Bill 1 on the House side in order to have 10005 make sense, so decided to pull them together. And I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Further proponent testimony. Hello again.
Hello again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tim Rave, Sadaho. I'll be very brief. We rise in support of the bill for the same reasons we supported the other bill and the entire package of telehealth bills. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Rave, for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Hello.
Mr. Chairman and committee, Amy Witt from Lutheran Social Services. LSS also supports this telehealth bill. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony. Hello there.
Mr. Chair, Tiffany Wolfgang with the Department of Social Services, Division of Behavioral Health Director. Again, echoing my support, we were able to serve on the committees that developed these bills, and we are supportive of this action.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Hearing none, any opponent testimony? Also hearing none, any questions by members of the committee? Well, Madam Chair, I think it's time for action. Yes. So I would entertain a motion at this time.
Second.
We have a do-pass motion by Senator Duhamel, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll on the do-pass motion.
Senators Duhamel.
Aye.
Foster excused, Jensen.
Aye.
Rush excused, Russell.
Aye.
Steinhauer excused, Soholt.
Aye.
4 ayes and 3 not voting.
Motion passes unanimously. I think we'll probably better put that one on consent, huh? And with that, I will pass the gavel back to the rightful chairwoman.
Thank you, Senator Russell. So just to clarify, we are going to put House Bill 1005 on the consent agenda. All right. Is there any further business to bring before the Senate Health and Human Services Committee? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
It's been moved by Senator Russell and seconded by Senator Jensen for adjournment of Health and Human Services. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We are adjourned.